Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, it's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it, young boy! Continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Going well. Cavs camp has started, and we have a very important guest, so I will not elaborate further.
Yes, we do. We are welcoming back to the podcast Larry Nance Jr. Larry, how are you doing today?
Guys, I am great. A little bit tired, but I'm doing good.
How many days of dedicated practice in camp are we into at this point?
We are at day. This is, I mean, if you count the first, I mean, I guess, I don't know, that's what, four or five, but we've really started going yesterday. So we had a two-a-day yesterday, and then we had one real good one today. The rest, then it should take us to the end of the, at least I should say until what, next Friday against Indiana?
Yeah, I think
season game
Saturday. Yeah, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. If we're assuming your enthusiasm for basketball being back is a 10 out of 10, what rating would you give your excitement for being back on the podcast? Give it a number.
Oh, if season back is 10 out of 10, gosh, how high can I go? I mean, can I get up to a 13, 14? Like, yeah. Geez, it's great.
I mean, isn't it crazy? I actually, before this podcast, I was listening to the last time you came on when you were so kind to join us for our Game 7 rewatch pod for the 2016 Finals. And we were talking about how bored we were in quarantine a cool 8-9 months ago. And how yes. Like, if I had told you then that you still wouldn't have played a basketball game in the NBA since that last pod, like, how would you have responded? It's pretty wild.
I can tell you just from like what's been going on at practice, it looks like it, the ball is all over the place. We are just trying to shake the rust off at this point.
That is very understandable. How weird was it for you to watch those bubble games and from the outside looking in? Like that had to be difficult to, one, not be invited, and then tuning in and watching all of those teams competing.
It was tough, obviously, but like, I don't know. It's, for me, it added to the level of, I mean, what I'm hoping for this year. It just added to, like, you know, for me, it just added to the want to play, the want to be better, the want to say that ever happens again. Like, man, I did not want to be left at home, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. One of the things we had done throughout that period of time, because we're still doing a weekly Cavs podcast, which hasn't been the easiest thing with 9 months of no basketball. But one of the things we were focusing on was looking at those teams that were successful and trying to figure out what team building lessons and things like that. And we were really remarking at how many of these teams didn't necessarily, like, if you look at the final eight, they didn't have a ton of high picks, but it was just really an emphasis on player development. There wasn't a whole lot of teams that were known for tanking in that space. Were there any things that you kind of, any lessons or takeaways that you took from watching those games and kind of taking that step back?
Yeah, for me, I mean, the biggest thing was, I mean, and you said it, like, obviously there's the Lakers, right? There's the Lakers that are a superstar driven team. That, you know, if you got Bron, you got a chance. It's kind of the rule of the NBA at this point. You know, for me, it was the teams like Miami and the teams like Denver that really stood out to me. Like, you know, obviously Jokic just played himself into a, you know, one of the best centers in the league. Jamal Murray had an unbelievable bubble. But like, you look at that team and they're, you know, it was, I was super optimistic that like that there were teams, you mm-hmm. know, being competitive. You know, it's the league's been such a superstar driven league that like it just seemed like, all right, well, if you don't have a superstar, you might as well, you know, just wait until you get one.
Yeah.
But it was great. It was great. I just loved it. I liked the Heat as a full blown team. Like obviously Jimmy's pretty awesome, right? Yeah. He had a ridiculous bubble and all that stuff, and he's a heck of a player, obviously. You don't need me to say that, but you know, it was just very encouraging to see the team basketball come back.
Do you feel like just that the landscape of the league has changed where that is a more viable path to success? You know, in the 2015 to 2017 era, it really was Bron, Kyrie, Love, and that just mm-hmm. guaranteed you a finals berth in the East, and then the Warriors in the West. The top level talent was just so wild at that point. Do you think that the talent's just more evenly dispersed where these team, you know, driven approaches is a more viable path to success now?
I think it's more dispersed. I think the quote unquote super teams are kind of, you know, moving back to the two guys instead of the big threes. But at the same time, I think guys are getting better, you know, mm-hmm. like nobody really expected, you know, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic to, you know, to beat the Clippers, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, guys are just getting better, you know, you know, for me, that's super exciting. Like, obviously, we got new talent coming up. Jason Tatum's ridiculous. You know, Donovan Mitchell, like I said, Jamal Murray, like the guys that were, you know, are in front of us right now, we can kind of see the new wave coming up, and it's refreshing to see.
Do you think that the bubble, the play in the bubble from some of those guys, the Murrays, the Mitchells of the world, there was a lot of talk about, hey, it has that empty gym vibe. You don't have all the weird sight lines that come. Like, do you think there was anything kind of fluky about that environment that made these outputs more achievable? Or do you think these guys just announced themselves and they're here to stay?
Look, nothing they did was a fluke. Like, Jamal Murray was, I mean, you cannot take away what he did. Donovan Mitchell, you cannot take away what he did. TJ Warren, same thing. But, like, you know, the next step is carrying it over. You know, obviously it's one thing to do it, you know, to do it in however many games they played in the bubble. It's another thing to bring it into the regular season for, I guess I would say 82, but I guess what, 72 games this year, 75. So like, that's the next step. I don't, nothing they did was fluky. Like, they did it, you know, that is mm-hmm. on record. That is in the stat book. So, you know, they had an outstanding bubble, but the next step is just to carry it, you know, keep it up.
There's so many people I've talked to, and I mean, you kind of alluded to it as well, but there's just so much talent in the league right now. Like, I look at this Cavs roster this year, and I can see why you guys have excitement, because you look, it's 12 deep NBA players, tons of talent. It's also in a really interesting place, because I think from a front court perspective, between you, Andre, and Kevin, that's a really talented front court. But at the same time, you guys are kind of relying on all these young guys to initiate the offense. And do you kind of feel like the ceiling of this team is kind of determined by the learning curve of the young guys? Because it seems like you guys are going to have the talent to be competitive in games. It's just going to be those growing pains and kind of learning how to finish.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, we are optimistic, very optimistic. You know, since Bron left, it's been, you know,
difficult,
difficult to say the least. But like you said, we have legitimate NBA players on this roster now. You know, mm-hmm. guys that the league knows, the league has heard of. Like, people aren't like, huh, I think I know who that is. You know, guys that you're excited to have. And you know, we look at our team and it's like, you know, 10, 12 deep of guys that like you could throw in there at any time and feel confident about, which is nothing against the guys that were here before and have been there, but which is a new thing for us over the past few years. And it's exciting. You know, obviously, like you said, the front court of us three, and, you know, not to mention JaVale, who, you know, has a decent little resume now, you know, three-time champ, not too shabby.
I was thinking about him and Quinn Cook. Those dudes are just picking up rings left and right recently.
I know. Pat McCaw, too.
Yeah. Pat McCaw finally had his first year in the league without a ring. That's got to be weird for him.
Gosh, that's some guys have all the luck. No, but it's – yeah, I think you're right. Like, obviously, you know, Colin is coming off of – there's no other way to look at it. He's coming off a pretty ridiculous year. You know, yeah. Scored 20 points efficiently. You know, he's I don't have enough good to say about him as a person, as a player, and as his work ethic. He's nobody's worried about him. He's going to be Colin Sexton. And we know that's, you know, hard effort, hard playing, you know, flying around at 100 miles an hour all the time. Obviously we're excited to see Darius. You know, I said before, in the bubble, he was awesome. And he's continued to show that growth here in training camp. You know, Dylan's been great. So we're just excited. Yeah. I think the young guys a lot of what we do is going to depend on the young guys. And I think that's a good thing. They need that. And all that means is that, we're going to get them the kind of experience they need sooner rather than later.
So I wanted to ask you about Garland. All accounts, he was kind of the star of the mini bubble, the big surprise of the mini bubble. All reports indicate that he's still looking good here in camp. When you see a young guy like that, who by most statistical accounts had kind of a tough rookie year, the league was mm-hmm. a bit of a shock for him. What's different from year one to year two when you watch someone like that? Is it skill set? Is it, you know, his body? Or is it just, you know, the kind of preternatural feel for the game? Like, what's the biggest difference that you see in his game heading into year two?
I mean, his body's changed quite a bit. You know, going from, you know, everybody's got that point where they, you know, you want to say turn into a man, but like they shed some of the, you know, baby fat and really, you know, turn their body. And so I think he's hit that point. He looks great. He's moving awesome. And, you know, as someone that's had a knee surgery and has had, you know, been through that, it takes, you know, a full year and a half, 2 years to really trust and feel confident in that knee, in that joint again. So, you know, talking with him about that, like he feels confident again, which is just massive, you know, from experience. It's absolutely huge that he feels that. You can tell just the way he moves.
One thing I'm very curious about, because it's something that we've heard Sexton, Garland, and a lot of the other young guys kind of emphasize, is that they worked on the defensive end. Like they're trying to improve on that end of the floor. Can you give us some insight into how one goes about working on the defensive end throughout the offseason? Like, is it predominantly film study? I guess it kind of had to be with COVID, but what are kind of some of the steps that an NBA player takes when they want to improve on that end of the floor?
A lot of film study, a lot of, you know, for some guys it's working on their body. Like for instance, for me, you know, I ended the season, you know, learning, you know, kind of on the fly of how to guard threes and, you know, get around screens and move within, you know, move on the perimeter a little bit more. And so, for me, I don't want to say I worked on my defense by like, you know, slapping the floor and sliding all the time, but no, like it's
pulling
it's,
up your shorts.
Exactly. That type of thing. It wasn't that. It was like, you know, in the weight room, we'd be doing some quickness stuff rather than, you know, putting on bulk, you know, you know, for me that I don't need to add any bulk. And, you know, whether we did quick ladders, we did jump rope, we, you know, just little things to like speed up my feet so that getting around those screens, you know, guarding mm-hmm. someone off of pick and roll is easier. And so, it just, you know, varies by position. For Darius, it was his body. You know, he needed to get a little bit stronger to fight screens and help us in the pick and rolls. And he's done that, and he looks great so far.
So I kind of want to talk about Sexton, who, you know, by all accounts is constantly working on his body. He has the physical profile of someone who should be a pretty good point of attack defensive guard. And he's struggled on that end early in his career. What do you think the next steps he needs to make defensively? Because I almost feel like if what he gave the Cavs for the last 40 games or so after the Clarkson trade on offense, like that's fine. I don't actually need that much more.
It's pretty amazing
kind of production, you know, like that's perfectly acceptable. What kind of steps does he need to take on the defensive end when you already have the body, you do have that physical profile, and now it's time to turn it into, you know, good fundamentals?
For him, you know, like you said, he's got every physical trait that you could possibly hope for someone to have. I mean, you could plug him in at wide receiver or defensive back, and he'd excel at that too. You know what I mean? He's just a freak. But for him, it's the study of the game. It's the study of the defense. It's, you know, if it's personnel based, you know, if it's, if you've got, I'm trying to think of examples, if you're, you've got, you know, John Wall coming off a screen, you're guarding John Wall and he's coming off the screen versus if you're guarding Steph coming off the screen. If it's John Wall, you know, you can play the game and go under him. If it's Steph, don't even consider it. It's not an option, right? Like force him in the lane, then we'll deal with him once he gets there. But, you know, and it's that type of thing, you know, that we've got to learn. And it's not Collins' fault. It's, you see it with everybody that's been in the league 1-2 years. Like, it takes a while to learn different guys you're playing against. It takes a while to learn their tendencies. Like, you know, there's a difference.
More of a, sorry to interrupt, but do you think it is good? Like the struggle of most rookie? Because I mean, almost one of my favorite stats is that the Pelicans statistically were worse with Anthony Davis on the floor as a rookie on defense. Like, if every NBA rookie sucks at defense, like, is everyone. It learning tendencies or is it learning schemes or is it a bit of both?
It's a bit of both. I mean, it just depends on where you come from college. You know, it's, you know, if you come, when's the last time a Syracuse player was good at defense, you know, NBA, like their scheme is the one through one, the Boeheim defense, they guard in space and all that. So, you know, it just depends on what you learn in college and how you choose to adapt to that in the NBA. Like, you know, man to man for a lot of guys is kind of a foreign concept. We didn't do a whole lot of it at Wyoming. We did play a lot of zone. Mm-hmm. And so coming to the league for me was like, wait, we're in man-to-man nonstop. All right. And so, you know, I don't know if that was Collins' experience. I don't know who, you know, that could be Darius' experience. Who knows? But like, it's a shock, you know, it's a shock. Cause it's every night, like, especially the point guard position, you got a challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, even on, like, obviously there are the on nights that everybody knows where you got the Westbrooks, the Stephs, the Damian Lillards, but then like in off night, you know, for a point guard in the NBA, great. Go guard Colin Sexton.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like a quote unquote off night. You know what I mean? This like still averages 20. Let's not forget that. Yeah. So like it's the hardest position in basketball. And you know, so that's why, you know, statistically, do they have bad defensive years? Yeah. But at the same time, the older they get, the more they get to guard people, the more they get to see it and be around it, they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And it's also easier to give effort when the games are closer, right? Like when it's a bit of a blowout, it's going to fall apart a little bit. All right, guys, we're going to get back to the podcast with Larry Nance Jr. in just a moment, but I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. First of all, is Indeed. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to get your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Carter.
Justin, football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day or day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't you dare forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's Blue Wire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sports experts. Now, back to Larry Nance.
Was there something you yourself worked on in this offseason, that something new you want to bring to the table, or was it just kind of improving kind of in the margins and rounding out your game?
Yeah, for me, it was, a lot. Most of the time off seasons, you know, you get to work on one or two things, but this off season, I feel like I've worked on four or five. I mean, it, you know, we started off, you know, doing, you know, like I said, doing the quickness ladder, the jump ropes, the, you know, the quickness stuff, you know, I feel fully confident, and it's great with Okoro coming in, because, you know, anybody over six, anybody 6'7" and over, you know, great. That's, I got them until they get to about, until they get to about 7 foot, then that's where I check out. And, you know, somebody else got to do that job. That's not me anymore. And then
you sound relieved. You know,
relieved is an understatement. My knees are so glad. You know, and then yeah, obviously you take anybody shorter than that, but, you know, quickening up my feet, guarding threes, actually learning the three position a little bit more rather than just like putting me there and basically playing as a four, as a three. So, you know, now I feel like I can play, now I feel like I can legitimately play three positions on the court. Small ball center, obviously my most comfortable position, the four. And then, yeah, I'm comfortable as a three now as well. And, you know, we're working on it. And so, quickness of my feet, obviously I loaded up, you know, muscle mass and strength of my quads and hips and just to protect my knees and stay healthy. Obviously the shooting was throughout, working on shooting, ball handling. But man, a lot of it was just the mental side of the game, working on a lot of confidence stuff, a lot of, hey, let it fly. If you're open, let it go, you know, don't think twice about it. And so like, and, it was great. Like I had a good off season, very good off season. And I'm just like more excited than words can say to get the show, everything that we've been working on.
So you're someone who's added a jumper over the course of your career. And we always hear the stories, us plebs who would love to dream to be elite at basketball where we're not, but there's this idea of like any, you know, we always hear it, he makes them in practice. What is the biggest difference for you from making them in practice to making them in an NBA game? Because I think everyone kind of knows that's true, that a lot of people can hit from three in an empty gym, but when the lights come on, it's a lot harder, but they don't really know why. What is the biggest difference?
I would love to just say the lights, like the size of the gym. I don't know. To be honest with you, it's repetition. It's all repetition. Like, last summer I shot, I forget what the number was, in the tens of thousands of threes. I mean, like really, really got them up. And, you know, it translated for me going into that season. You know, I shot, you know, the most threes I've shot ever, made the most threes I've made ever, made the highest percentage ever. But, you know, all it is just that repetition to where when you get in the game, knowing that like, hey, look, like when the ball is coming to you, like, yeah, why would I hesitate? I've taken 20,000 of these,
right?
You know, just knowing that you've put in the work. And so a lot of times, like when you hear like, oh, so-and-so makes it in practice and doesn't make in the games. Well, you know, that when that ball is coming to him in the game, I guarantee you, he's thinking like, bend my knees, elbow straight, cock the wrist back. He, you know, they're thinking like all through the steps of their shot, where instead of just trusting it, like, hey, I put the work in, I've done my homework. You know, this is just a test. And, you know, for me, that was a big hurdle to overcome. And last year, I feel like I got over it. And so this year, I'm really looking forward to doing even more so of that. But when you hear like guy makes it in practice and not in games, I think that's the biggest difference. Is just don't think about it, let it go.
So Justin just asked you about kind of your on-court skill profile and how that's changing, but the team went through a pretty big change this offseason. Tristan Thompson signed with the Celtics. And, you know, first, I kind of just want to hear what your reaction to that news was. Obviously, Tristan was the vocal leader in the locker room and someone who was clearly pretty beloved. If, I mean, all you have to do is check Twitter to see that. What was your reaction to, you know, Tristan leaving? And then the follow-up question there is, you know, what do you feel is your responsibility to take on in terms of being a leader for this team?
Well, Double T leaving is twofold. Obviously, like, as a, you know, great friend, incredible teammate. I was super sad to see him go. You know, he FaceTimed me and Kev before the news came out, and you know, we had our group powwow and everything before Woj broke it. But you know, for him, I just I think he's going to be awesome. You know, there were a few teams that he was saying he could have gone to, but I think he just made an awesome decision. He's going to be great for them, and he's got a very real chance of going to the finals, and, you know, he deserves it. So I wish Tristan nothing but the best. He's been, you know, one of my favorite Cavaliers to, you know, to root for growing up, play against with the Lakers. And now, you know, he was one of my favorite teammates. So, yeah, I wish him all the best. But, you know, two times a year, three times a year, however much we play him, I'll be trying to get some cheap shots in on. But yeah, he was a vocal leader of the team also. So, you know, with being around another year, you know, Kevin is very much so a leader. He's a lead by example guy. He's a, you know, he's the one that you look at and you're like, all right, I feel confident because Kevin Love is on the court and Kevin Love is taking that shot. Like, you know, he's our guy. You know, if we have a guy, it's obviously Kevin Love. Mm-hmm. And but in terms of vocal, you know, that's if you can hear, my voice is a little bit hoarse, like a little bit raspy, because I've been screaming just at training camp, you know, talking to guys on defense, just calling coverages out, just being super loud vocal, just whatever, saying whatever, hey, crack back, screen weak, whatever the call is, just saying it loud. And that's what Tristan was great at, is like, you know, because, you know, maybe for me and him, things that we think are, well, duh, that's common sense, some guys don't. So you just have to say your thoughts, right? You know, it's almost like, you know, I consider myself, you know, one of the higher basketball IQs on the team. So, you know, you got to try to impart that on as many people as possible. Like, get your teammates to hear it. Get your teammates to hear your thought process so that they can start seeing that and kind of thinking the same things. And, you know, so I've been working on that, you know, just talking to guys individually, like, hey, you know, you need help, you want to shoot for practice, I got you, just let me, you know, different stuff like that. Having the guys over, you know, for a dinner every now and again, setting up events. And it's actually something that I've, you know, quite enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's something that comes natural to you? I mean, I think every time we hear about, like, you know, the kind of cliche leader, I think of like those Jameis Winston speeches pregame, where everyone's kind of like rolling W's, their eyes, yeah, while he works himself up. Like, how do you avoid that? Like, what does an authentic leader look like to you? And how do you kind of make sure that you're, you know, getting these young kids' attention?
Right. I mean, you just got to be true to yourself. You know, like, am I going to be screaming, you know, in the middle of the huddle, you know, beating my chest and screaming at guys as to why we have to win this game or whatnot? No, that's not me. So if I try to do that, you know, one thing that you know, NBA players as a group, we're very good at doing is seeing through the BS, right? We'll spot a fake very quickly. And that's when you start getting laughed at and people start making jokes of you and stuff like that. So if you're just real and you're who you are, everybody appreciates that. You know, you know, for me, like I said, I'm not going to be, you know, rah-rah, screaming, beating chest and all that type of stuff. But hey, look, you know, I'll be using the same exact voice. Like, you know, fellas, we got to get this. Home opener, Charlotte, right? It's a very real win. You know, just type of stuff, you know, and you know, who, you know, you got to use your, just like as a basketball player, you got to use what you have. And for me, it's a lot of logic, a lot of IQ, and the guy's ear is what I have. And so, you know, that's how I plan on using it. You know, if we have someone that decides to yell at us, then great. But, you know, a lot of teams don't need that.
Yeah.
They just need a voice they trust. And that's what I'm building and working on with these guys.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that, because Carter and I have talked about it a million times. Like the last time the Cavs were kind of going through a retooling here after the decision, there didn't seem to be a lot of adults in the locker room. And it seems like the organization, the approach just seems to be about building culture, accountability this offseason. And to have guys like you and Kevin there to be those vocal leaders, it's great to see. What are some of your first impressions? The one young guy I guess we haven't talked about is Isaac Okoro. You mentioned him. Now that you've kind of had a week with him, what are some of your first impressions there?
So, you know how we said, you know, last year Darius, you know, needed to work on his body a little bit. You know, that was his NBA adjustment. That will not be Isaac's NBA adjustment. He is built like a freaking tank, man. He's built like a tank. That he's rock solid. He's, you know, if you were in the NFL draft, you know how some guys get drafted, like just like not a position, just like athlete.
Yeah.
He's a freak, right? So he's a total freak. And it's been great to see, you know, his nose for the ball is unlike anybody else we really have. You know, he's got a little bit of that Tristan, like just stick his nose in there and see if he can go get it, even if it's going to, you know, wind up with him getting whacked or tripped or something. So his nose for the ball is awesome. And you need that. He's, you know, his defensive instincts are great. Fighting through screens, over screens, you know, he's the real deal. You know, I was glad when we took him, because that's, you know, what I had heard about him, and that's exactly what we got. You know, he's a real problem on the defensive end. You know, he's a slasher, super athletic, but you know, his body is his weapon.
So, yeah, I mean, that's obviously interesting. That's great to hear. And I am wondering on his offensive game, you know, I think there's so much talked about his defense, because this is a team that obviously needed a little infusion of, you know, that rugged defensive talent on the perimeter. What are you seeing from him offensively? What's impressed you, maybe surprised you about his game on offense? And then where do you think he really needs to, you know, step up that part of his game as he progresses?
So his, you know, he's got a real good nose for diving. You know, like he's a good cutter, obviously finishes at the rim as well as anyone with his, you know, explosiveness. He's, you know, got nice touch around the rim and stuff like that. Gets out on the break and runs. But, you know, obviously, you know, just what everybody knows, what everybody said, you know, his shot is not what it was made out to be. It's not like, you know, it's not like Bill Cartwright from the Bull. I wasn't going to use a current NBA player, because then, like, I'm sure I'm going to get torched by him next year. But yeah, I'm not using a current NBA player. But like, sure. You know, it's
Justin who did that.
Yeah. Everybody blame me.
No one aggregates us. It's fine. You could shit on anyone you want. No one's going to catch it here.
No, I use Bill Cartwright because, you know, remember his jump shot? It was crooked. But it is not broken at all. It's you know, the more reps, the more shots he gets, the better it's going to be. It looks great. You know, he's got some solid touch on it. You know, there are guys that, you know, when they miss, you feel bad for Jerry West over there, cause they get cracked, but you know, he's not one of those guys. He's got some touch on him. He's got some, you know, he's definitely got some finesse there, and, you know, his shot is not what everybody made it out to be. And, you know, I'm glad that they did, because it's our game.
No kidding.
I had a question about shooting in general for this Cavs team, because it feels like this development staff, if you can really, you know, it's almost impossible for fans like us to always be able to kind of figure out exactly what a coaching staff is doing. We're not in the room, we're not in practice. And, you know, it's just hard to tell. But one thing that it seems like the Cavs coaching staff can hang its head on is shooting development. I mean, Sexton's jumper has taken leaps and bounds. Your jumper has taken leaps and bounds. How much of that is individual work, and how much of that is kind of working directly with the coaching staff on, you know, cleaning up these mechanics?
It's both. You know, obviously you can't, the coaching staff can't will you to be a better shooter without you wanting to be one. So, yeah, I think it speaks volumes to the guys' work ethic that we've had. You know, Colin is, you know, he lives in the gym. You know, literally lives in the gym. He might as well have a bed in our practice facility. I work tirelessly at it as well. And you know, Isaac's going to be a great shooter. not worried about it, because, you know, like you said, our development staff is very good. Very good. You know, JJ Outlaw, Mike Garrity, Josh Broghammer, Dan Giroux, Tony Lang, basically, you know, and if I miss anybody, I'm sorry, but everybody has been, you know, they're hands-on, want to work with you, willing to work with you. You know, I think Andrew Olson, shooting coach, who's done an awesome job with all of us. You know, we're, you know, I think, you know, Colin's jumper speaks for itself. You know, that was kind of his shtick too, coming out of the draft. Like, man, well, can he, you know, is he going to be able to shoot that three? Well, after a 40% 3-point shooting year, yes. Yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I couldn't get over that. It's
yeah.
we don't study the draft a whole lot. Like, one of the things we do is we're pretty open about kind of where our blind spots are, and we'll bring on experts and people that'll kind of tune us in. But the way that his jump shot evolved was really, really impressive. And one question I have. So obviously the focus of this season is creating the accountability, going out there, creating good habits, trying to win every single night. But especially as a leader of this team, if you could set one goal for this season that isn't kind of tied to wins, what would that goal for this season be? Like, what do you want people to say about this Cavs season after it's done?
We have to define a culture, right? Like, and I know culture is a buzzword, so I'll go more in depth as to what I mean. You hear, and I know you hear Golden State, right? You know what that team stands for, right? You hear Portland and you know what that team stands for, right? You, like, there's, you know, there's no real leaks out of Portland. There's no real, you know, guys acting up. There's none of that really. It's you know, there are some cultures in the league. Like, obviously Boston's got one as well. I'm trying to think, even Memphis has its, you know, grit and grind mentality, you know, and that's a league-wide known thing that, like, all right, when we play Portland, like, they are not going to beat themselves. You know, they're not going to beat themselves. And so we have to define our culture, whatever that may be, whether it is, you know, JB coming from Memphis, whether it is we want to be that, not grit and grind, but we want to be that hard-nosed dive on the floor, you know, we're going to hit you first type team, or, you know, the extra pass mentality, or, you know, whatever it is that we decide it's going to be. And that's obviously what we're working on, accountability being the biggest word we've come up thus far. You know, whatever we decide to be, we have to define that this year. You know, whether that's 50 wins, 30 wins, 20 wins, or zero, we have to define a culture so that every night when you play the Cavs, you know damn well they're not going to X, or they're going to blank, you know. And that's the biggest thing that has to come from this year, because, you know, over the past few years we haven't had a whole lot of stability, and I think with JB we're really going to, and you know, any coach, any front office, any team wants a culture, and we really have a chance to establish one.
So you bring up JB being brought in, and obviously he was with the team at the beginning of last year under Beilein as his lead assistant. What's different about his camp, and kind of what you talk about establishing this culture, what kind of, you know, messages are you getting from JB in terms of the culture he wants to develop for you guys? Because I still feel like, even though he coached the team, to fans he's a bit of an unknown quantity, because he didn't have time to install his own systems and things like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, we installed some of his systems, we had 11 games, 5 games, or whatever it was. I don't know. Mm-hmm. JB is the one that, you know, put that lineup in where we close games with me, Kevin, Tristan. You know, JB did a lot of stuff at the end of the year last year that fans should be really excited about. You know, he's a really good basketball mind. I know I'm gonna keep using it, culture. He's an awesome culture guy. He is the culture guy to have for us right now. He's young enough in age to get to the young guys. He's been around enough to have coached a young Kevin Love. You know, he's been around to where, you know, Drummond respects him. I respect him. Yeah, he's the perfect guy for us at the right time. He relies on a lot of, player, again, accountability. He relies on a lot of accountability. You know, I'll go to him all the time and throughout practice and be, you know, tap him on the shoulder, be like, hey, you know, what what do I need more of? You know, what, you know, do I need to speak up more? Am I, you know, what do the guys need? What can I say to them right now? What, you know, just try, hey, you know, I need to pick, you know, we need to be in the same camp, right? So if you want this, I need to be preaching that as well as one of our leaders. And, you know, I think there's a level of trust that he gives to each guy that you can do that. And it's not, it's, you know, he's going to give you a great answer and, you know, he'll respect you, you know, for wanting to be in the same system as him. And guys want to be in the same train of thought as JB, which is a great thing.
So you defined, you kind of said, you said Colston's like, oh, I'll be a little more specific. Can you do the same thing for the word accountability? Like, what does accountability mean to you? And kind of how can this team manifest that?
Accountability to me is me, who I think I'm going to be one of our better defenders, right? I've been one of our better defenders. I'm going to be even better this year. If I get blown by, it doesn't matter if it you know, this will be my sixth year in the league. Darius should be able to say something to me and should say something to me. Isaac should be able to say something to me as a rookie. He should be able to say something to me. Kev should be able to say something to me. It's accountability throughout, right? If K Love is, you know, his man beats him down the floor a few times, like, you know, Isaac should be able to go, Kev, man, what are you doing? You know, to the point where you're not looking at him like, be quiet, rookie. No, like everybody's got an equal voice in here. Like he's accountable to you. You're accountable to me. And that's how it has to be. And you know, that stems from on the court stuff. That stems from off the court stuff. That stems from that even goes to a leadership perspective, to where if I'm at practice and I get frustrated and slam a ball as a leader, I can't do that. Right. To where JB can go, you know, Larry, no, we can't be having you do that. Or even JB doesn't have to say it. You know, Dan Giroux can say it. Tony Lang can say it. Coach Lindsay can say it. DG can say it and go, hey, man, like, that's not what we're about. And instead of looking at him rolling your eyes, you know, you're like, you know what? I got you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's accountability, not from just the coaching staff to the players, from the players to the coaching staff, from, you know, from player to player. It's a, you know, it's an entire organizational thing. And that's, I guess that's what I mean by accountability, that nobody's bigger just because you got more years or have an all-star appearance or you're a rookie, you're lesser. Like it's we're all on the same plane and everybody's opinion holds the same weight.
One question I have, cause we talked about questions that don't have to do with winning. One thing that does is the play-in tournament. Obviously that's a new introduction this season. I want to get your thoughts on the play-in tournament. Do you like the idea of it, or is it something that you're not quite comfortable with?
So, and again, I don't act exactly, I get all the Shams and Woj's updates too, but yeah, I don't read them all the time. what I know last year they did the 8th and 9th seed did a play-in game, right?
Yeah.
Is it, so, it goes down to 10 this year or 9?
It's 7 and 8 versus 9 and 10. And the teams that are the 7 and 8 seed only have to win one of the two games. And then the 9 or 10 seed would have to win two games. So it's basically, if you're a 7 or 8 seed, you're not guaranteed to make the playoffs, which I would imagine you'd like it more if you're a 9 or 10 seed than you would as a 7 or 8.
Right. I mean, yeah, look, where we're sitting right now, I am quite a fan of it.
Right.
I'm a fan of it. I love it, you know, but if I'm Orlando, I'm furious. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm Orlando, that's, you know, been in that 7th, 8th seed the past few years off of your win percentage. And, you know, that's great. That's what you got. You've earned that. And now the league's trying to make you earn it again. Yeah. I'd be pretty upset about it, but hey, like, you know, those are two extra playoff spots,
right?
That, you know, I think that we're hey, look, I'm the optimist here. I think we're gonna be in that. I think we're gonna be I think we could be in the 7-8 spot. Look, like I said, optimism here, I'm trying to speak it into existence. But for us, I love it. You know, I'm sure other teams hate it, but you know, I think the viewers love it, which is really what matters.
Yeah, I feel like this is, it's constantly a battle, I feel, for the league to try to figure out how to make the end of the season interesting. and how to make it and how to, you know, make it worthwhile. Do you feel like that there will be an extra sense of urgency now for a lot of teams that maybe weren't there? You know, if you are hanging out on that periphery of the 10-9 where maybe normally your organization would start to sit the best guys, you know, phantom or not even phantom injuries, but, you know, 1 to 2 day injuries become 2-3 week injuries. And like those kind of shutdowns, do you think that'll kind of, you know, I mean, really it's all just to solve the tanking problem. I mean, I feel like the Adam Silver administration's been pretty obsessive about solving tanking with changing lottery odds. And now this, do you think that this helps with tanking?
I think so. I think, to be honest with you, I think I cannot remember the last time tanking has worked. I can't remember the last time tanking's worked. I mean, you could say, you know, the process with the Sixers worked pretty well. But
a lot of pain to get there, though.
A lot of pain to get there. But yeah,
a lot of turnover too. Like outside of Simmons and Embiid, like a lot of the guys that were part of it
are still there.
Yeah, they kind of had to turn things around because there wasn't that accountability and actual team building, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, the tanking thing, I think that's over with. You know, they, you know, through this play-in tournament and through, you know, shuffling up the draft lottery the way they did, I think they've done an awesome job of making, you know, encouraging guys to play until the last game and, you know, fight for every win they get. And I personally love it. Mm-hmm. I love it, but I do think this is very much so a ploy to stop that. That's a that's a bad culture move. That's a bad, you know, TV revenue move. That's a bad look on the NBA as a whole. Tanking is not something that we should be, you know, advocating for as a league. So if this play-in tournament, you know, kind of gets rid of some of that mentality, then great, keep it. Nobody wants to see teams, you know, lose games on purpose. That's a bad look.
Yeah, I call it the Ricky Bobby mentality, the Ricky Bobby team building mentality, where if you're not first, you're supposed to be last.
Exactly.
It doesn't work. And especially with the new lottery odds, like I think you should just focus on, like for me, analyzing this Cavs season, As I mentioned before, I think they absolutely, you guys have the talent. It's just going to be the learning curve, right? And if those young guys are ready to execute at that level and they're performing at that level, then all of a sudden, yeah, if you're winning all those games, you deserve to be where you are. Like you should always try to be performing at the ceiling of whatever the roster is.
My thing is, even if tanking works, I'm at the stage of my life where I'm not interested. Like I am a child now. I can't sit and watch 82 or 72 garbage games for no upside at all, you know, to try to find something in the first quarter before it's a 30 point deficit. Like I'm not interested in it. I just want to see good basketball at this point. And I think like there is a bit of basketball gods karma involved in, if you do things right, that you kind of get results and, you know, luck finds you, you know, like a team like the Nuggets lands with a Michael Porter Jr. who fell to them and is clearly looking like a young star for them. So like, do you kind of believe in the basketball gods?
The basketball gods are so real. They are such a thing. And honestly, I just talked about something about it at practice today. Cause you know, we are going through the, you know, drills, running through offense and guys were giving the ball up, you know, pass, kick, drive, pass, kick out. And you know, somebody shot it. I don't know who it was. Dean Wade took a shot and it was like, I don't even have to look. Don't even have to look because you did the right stuff. That's going in. That's just what it is. It's good offense. You know, it's good offense. You just, you know, you share the ball, move the ball and that shot's going in. You know, it's, I believe in the basketball gods through and through. You know, if you're living right off the court, you know, you're going to get those bounces if you're doing the right things, making the right passes, you're going to get some better bounces. You know, some more rebounds are going to fall to you. I believe in that 100%.
One thing I want to touch on just before we wrap this up, obviously the big wild card this season is COVID. And you've tweeted about it, mentioning that you are yourself more vulnerable having Crohn's. Did you give any consideration into opting out, or what's your confidence level in kind of the plan going into this season?
So I didn't give any, you know, consideration in opting out because you know, the more information we have on it and the more, you know, the more info, you know, that comes out and stuff like that, it's, you know, my age group, you know, my age group as an athlete, you know, I'm even though I'm immunosuppressed, immunodeficient, you know, I'm going to be fine personally. Yeah. You know, like if I get it, I'll be fine. You know, if any of us get on the team, we're going to be fine. You know, we are not the demographic that it's affected by. It's, you know, I know for a fact, I'm going to be doing the right things. I'm not going to be going to see grandparents. I'm not going to be going to see, you know, I'm the age groups that are at risk. So for me, no, I didn't give it, I never really thought about actually opting out. But it's definitely, you know, after learning about some of the measures they're taking and all that stuff, I think, you know, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. Someone's going to get it on some team. We're going to be, you know, panicking just like the NFL, and, you know, there's going to be scrambles and postponements and stuff like that. But I think, I know for a fact that, you know, Adam Silver is the best person to be handling that. He did an unbelievable job with the bubble, and I think he's going to do an unbelievable job this year, and has already rolled out some really great protocols for it. And so we're going to be just fine as a league. I wasn't too, you know, I didn't really consider sitting out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's from a fan perspective, because that's how we view everything. It's just with 9 months of not having basketball and then trying now going through all these extra steps, like, to me, it just, as a fan, it adds a level of appreciation, because we're finally getting basketball back. We understand that all the players are going through extra steps. I mean, you can do all the right things and still get it, but if you have, here's the word again, accountability and all that, you're going to at least try to mitigate it as much as possible and limit your risk. So I it's another spot where it comes in handy, and it just adds to my appreciation that basketball is finally coming back. I mean, I'm in Winnipeg.
Basketball is back, man.
It gets to like minus 50 here sometimes. So if there wasn't basketball and I'm just sitting in my house all winter, things could get a little bleak.
I hear you. It was hot this summer. It was great, 80 degrees, and, you know, in Ohio, and I'm sitting there, you know, just angry. Just for no reason. It's a beautiful day. I'm sitting outside with my family, and it's great. And just like, I still don't have a date when we're gonna start. Yeah, I hear you. We love basketball. You know, basketball is finally back, and most importantly, Cavs basketball is back. And I think this is gonna be a really fun year for everybody. I'm certain of it.
I do think it's funny, kind of hearing you talk about this, because, you know, we're way too online. We're way too on Twitter. And I know we probably should be less on Twitter, but it's funny when you kind of hear the discourse about, you know, whether there should be a season, whether players should be asked to play. And it's like, sometimes I think people forget that you guys really like basketball too. And that, yeah, this, like, is your, yeah, passion.
Yeah. Look, this is not just, you know, I'm sure there are some guys that won't admit it, that only do this because they're good at it. That is not the majority. Like, yes, it's the best job in the world. You could take away my paycheck and I'd still play ball, right? Like, this, it's a love. It's a passion. It's something that we've been doing since we were so young. So yeah, like I said, you know, am I immunosuppressed? Yes. Do I love basketball enough to risk it? Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what most guys' heads are at right now. Gosh, basketball's back, man. It's so bad. I'm pumped.
Well, that's a perfect place to wrap this up. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and giving us so much valuable insight. And we really appreciate your time.
Yeah, officially a friend of the pod now. This is appearance too. So you're a friend of the pod.
I am a friend of the pod. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, put it on the resume, Larry.
All right, I will. Well, it's going to my Twitter bio.
Perfect. Well, thanks. Big thanks to Larry. Thanks to all our listeners. If you want to support the show, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. Stay safe out there, guys. And until next time, go Cavs.